excerpt from Arena One, Slave Runners by Morgan Rice. I slowly open Bree's door. The second I do, Sasha charges in and rushes to Bree's side, lying down and resting her chin on Bree's chest as she licks her face. It never ceases to amaze me how close those two are. Sometimes I feel like they are even closer than we are. Bree slowly opens her eyes and squints into the darkness.
Brooke?
She asks. It's me, I say softly. I'm home. She sits up and smiles as her eyes light up with recognition. I lean down and give her a hug. I have a surprise for you, I say, barely able to contain my excitement. She looks up wide-eyed, then closes her eyes and opens her hands, waiting. An excerpt from Another Bad Dog Book by Joni B. Cole. Not another one. I had gone to the bookstore to read the gossip magazines for free when I saw it. Yet another best-selling book about someone's adorable, out-of-control dog. Usually these types of bad dog stories center around a yellow lab or similar large, loping breed, though the subject of this newest memoir was, according to the title, A Very Bad Beagle. The description on the back cover read pretty much the same as all those other bad dog books that fly off the shelves. The doggy main character was an exuberant, incorrigible scamp with a habit of overturning houseplants, eating table legs, and making madcap dashes through restaurants, offices, and other public venues, all while teaching its owners life lessons like the value of commitment and what it really means to be a family. An excerpt from Verbs, Verbs, Verbs by Marvin Turbin. Kinds of verbs. What is a verb? A verb is a word that shows or expresses action, being, or doing. From the moment you woke up this morning to right now, you've used hundreds of verbs. You've spoken them, read them, heard them, and written them. You couldn't communicate with people without verbs. You couldn't even talk to a dog without them. Sit, jump, fetch. Every sentence must have a verb. Most verbs show action. But action doesn't always mean fast-moving, energetic, vigorous, forceful, action-packed action, like running, throwing, or jumping. Phew, that last sentence was so full of action, it was exhausting. An excerpt from The Scarlet Letter by Nathaniel Hawthorne.
Good wives, said a hard-featured dame of 50. I'll tell ye a piece of my mind. It would be greatly for the public behoof if we women, being of mature age and church members in good repute, should have the handling of such malefactresses as this Hester Prynne. What think ye, gossips? If the hussy stood up for judgment before us five, that are now here in a knot together, would she come off with such a sentence as the worshipful magistrates have awarded? Marry, I trow not.
People say, said another, that the Reverend Master Dimmesdale, her godly pastor, takes it very grievously to heart that such a scandal should have come upon his congregation.
Them magistrates are God-fearing gentlemen, but merciful overmuch. That is a truth, added a third autumnal matron. At the very least, they should have put the brand of a hot iron on Hester Prynne's forehead. Madam Hester would have winced at that, I warrant me. But she, the naughty baggage, little will she care what they put upon the bodice of her gown.
Ah, but, interposed more softly, a young wife holding a child by the hand, let her cover the mark as she will. The pang of it will be always in her heart.
What do we talk of marks and brands, whether on the bodice of her gown or the flesh of her forehead? Cried another female.
Mercy on us, good wife, exclaimed a man in the crowd. Is there no virtue in woman save what springs from a wholesome fear of the gallows? That is the hardest word yet. Hush now, gossips, for the lock is turning in the prison door, and here comes Mistress Prynne herself.
An excerpt from Little Women by Louisa May Alcott.
Christmas won't be Christmas without any present, grumbled Joe, lying on the rug.
It's so dreadful to be poor, sighed Meg, looking down at her old dress.
I don't think it's fair for some girls to have plenty of pretty things, and other girls nothing at all,
added little Amy, with an injured sniff.
We've got father and mother and each other.
said Beth contentedly from her corner. The four young faces on which the firelight shone brightened at the cheerful words, but darkened again as Joe said sadly,
"We haven't got father and shall not have him for a long time."
She didn't say, "Perhaps never," but each silently added it, thinking of father far away where the fighting was. Nobody spoke for a minute. Then Meg said in an altered tone,
"You know the reason Mother proposed not having any presents this Christmas was because it is going to be a hard winter for everyone, and she thinks we ought not to spend money for pleasure when our men are suffering so in the army. We can't do much, but we can make our little sacrifices and ought to do it gladly. But I am afraid I don't."
And Meg shook her head as she thought regretfully of all the pretty things she wanted. An excerpt from The Scientific American Brave New Brain by Judith Horstman. Scientists are finding one of the ways your brain changes itself is by actually changing your genes, or more correctly, by the acting out, or not, of certain genes in the process of epigenesis. We know that your genome is the total deoxyribonucleic acid, DNA, that you inherit from your ancestors and contains the instructions for making your unique body and brain. Another layer of information, called the epigenome, is stored in the proteins and chemicals that surround and stick to the DNA. It's a kind of chemical switch that determines which genes are activated or not. It tells your genes what to do and where and when.